episode with Danae Owens, we are going to be discussing the ideologies and the four agreements. This is one of Danae's favorite books. I think you all know who Danae is, and we are so excited to be here again and sharing what we're passionate about with you. So let's welcome Danae back to the show.
How's it going, everyone?
Yes. So let's jump right into it, just how I like it.
Do you hear any noise in the background? If anybody, I am outside, so is everything good?
I mean, I hear a little bit, but we're all good.
Perfect.
So the first agreement is to be impeccable with your word. Now, what does this mean to you?
Well, being impeccable with your word. By the way, I love this. Like, I love this book. I read this book like a few years ago, and it kind of changed my perspective on a lot of things. It was actually given to me by a friend, and then well, it was given to my wife by a friend, and then she had me read it. But yeah, it's things, common sense things that we already know, like you said earlier, like we were talking about. But it's just a good refresher. So, one of the first agreements is being impeccable with your word. To me, that means a lot. Because I look at it like, I look at it as our word, as like a bank. And when we follow through on our word, which is being impeccable to our word, we're actually putting a deposit into that bank of confidence. That's what I meant to say, a bank of confidence. So every time, I know for me, when I say that I'm going to do something, every time that I do it, whether I don't want to, don't feel like it or not, but because I gave my word, I'm going to be impeccable with my word. Every time I get a deposit of confidence. And what happens is when you're not impeccable with your word, actually, that's a withdrawal of confidence. Because then we start to get inconsistent. And when we get inconsistent, we start thinking like, oh, well, maybe I can't do this. This is too hard. Or whatever the case may be. So I just think in being impeccable to your word, it's actually a confidence booster. And also, it's just, it tells a lot about a person. Let's say if you're on a dating scene. You know what I mean? You're dating this young man or young woman or whatever the case may be. And they tell you, y'all plan a date. And they tell you to be, you know, be dressed at 8 o'clock. I'll be there at 8 o'clock. And here they go. They arrive at 9:30, 10 o'clock. Or they don't arrive at all. How are you going to feel? You're going to, you know, have a bad perception about that person. Why? Because they didn't keep their word. So I really think our word is all we have. And we have to be very impeccable with our word. And we also have to watch what we say and how we talk to ourselves. That's another part of being impeccable with our word, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Miguel was saying how we are one of the creatures that can speak in the way that we do, you know.
Absolutely.
And so the word is a gift. And we could, and he describes the word as it could be black magic, you know. And let's give an example for that. The example he gives, I think, is a really good example. So let's stick with it.
Yeah.
He says, a mother comes home from work one day with a headache, and her daughter is singing. And the daughter has a beautiful voice, but the mom gets overwhelmed, and she's like, shut up, your voice is horrible. And so the girl, for a long time, becomes super shy. She stops wanting to talk in front of people. She doesn't sing anymore. And it's not that her voice was actually, you know, bad. It was that her mom just had such a crazy day. And then her word cast a spell onto the little girl. And the point that he makes about this is that the mom didn't know, and so therefore we must forgive them because they didn't know.
And we have to and that's what I was getting into, we have to actually be careful with our words, because like you said, words are spells. That's why it's called spelling, you know what I mean? Translation. So when we speak things over people, we're speaking spells over people, whether we like it or not, whether we know it or not. So when you speak positivity, just like he gives an example of a parent raising a child. If you tell your child, like, you're stupid, you're dumb, or you're never going to get this right, or and they grow up with lack of confidence. You cast that spell over them, so they're going to think that they are stupid. They're going to think that they are dumb. But if you speak life into them, speak love into them, that's going to have a different effect. So we definitely have to watch our language and how we talk to people, because how we, you know, we treat people how we want to be treated. Do we want somebody calling us stupid, dumb, crazy, or whatever the case may be? But yeah, words are very much like spells, because you're casting a spell with your tongue. The power is in the tongue. That's why words are affirmation. You affirm what you say. Okay. If you wake up every day and you speak positive affirmations, most likely you're going to have a positive day. If you wake up first thing in the morning, oh, this sucks, I hate my life, guess what? You're going to have a sucky day.
Yeah, exactly. Your word is much more powerful than, you know, a lot of people think.
Absolutely.
Let's bring up some of the points that he actually makes in the book itself. So to be impeccable with your word, you A, speak with integrity. B, yes. Say only what you mean. C, avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. D, use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. So I just want to bring up another example about how, you know, using your word to gossip about others is another way that he describes as a virus. When it gets into, you know, your head, it can put ideas, and then you agree with it, and then you focus on the idea so much that it becomes true.
Yeah. That's another point they did bring up in the book is gossiping. And That's dangerous, because not only are you casting spells on others, but you're also poisoning yourself. You're poisoning yourself when you're sitting up talking negative about other people or whatnot, because at the end of the day, that's not their problem. They don't have to deal with that. You're the person who's carrying that negative energy. And it's just a lot of negative energy that we carry when we're gossiping about others, because think about it, when you're gossiping about people, it's always negative. So you're thinking negative. You're thinking hate, you're thinking jealousy, whatever that emotion is when you're talking about that person, you're feeling that. And then you carry that for the rest of your day. So again, being impeccable with our word and speaking with character, integrity, and such things, it's not just because we want to look a certain way or whatever to the outside, but it's also healthy to us as it is to others by being impeccable with our word.
Yeah. When we, like you mentioned earlier, are impeccable with your word, that's honoring yourself. And when you aren't, that's kind of like lying to yourself over and over again. And if there was a person in your life that kept lying to you over and over and over again, would you trust that person? Would you believe them? Absolutely. It's the same thing for yourself. So
I agree.
Yeah. So the second agreement is don't take anything personally. So the points on this are A, nothing others do is because of you. B, what others say and do is a projection of their own reality, their own dream. C, when you are immune to the opinions and actions of others, you won't be the victim of needless suffering. So what's your take on that, Dene?
Well, this is actually one of my favorite agreements. This is the one that really like resonated with me the most. And I had this conversation with someone earlier at the gym, because he was talking about something that someone said and he was angry about it. And I was like, well, that's not your problem. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, that's their problem. I said, because what you're gonna go home and you're gonna forget about it and you're gonna go on with life. But that person who's speaking that hate towards you or whatever, they're gonna dwell on that and they're gonna have to live with that. And a lot of times when we speak negative to people is because of our own insecurities. So if I'm, it's the same thing. It's like the bully syndrome. Most bullies are bullies because they have insecurities. So they have to put up this facade and kind of look down on others because they feel down. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of times we take things personal when people say stuff or treat us a certain way, but we have to realize that it has nothing to do with us and everything to do with them. So we can't take that personal because that's their problem. That's a deep-rooted hate or a deep-rooted issue that they have to deal with. That's between them and God. That's something that they haven't overcame or grew through or some type of trauma, childhood trauma that they never dealt with and that they're carrying. So they have to carry that burden. So we can't let others' negativity weigh us down. We can't take that personal because it has nothing to do with us.
Exactly. And another point that I want to make about that too is how he mentions their own dream. So let's just say that our lives are a channel for us on TV. This is our channel. Somebody else, their life is like their channel. Like everyone is going through their own show, their own dream, right? And everyone's dream is made out of their perspectives from how they were raised as a child, their ego, their culture. There's a lot of things mixed in this puddle that is, you know, their dream, basically. And one of the points that he makes in the book is that when we are living in, so naturally, I believe our dream is peaceful and happy. You know, imagine children. They just run around and play imaginary things in their head. That, I think, is the true nature of humans. But then we grow up and we have, you know, stress, anxiety, and more stuff like that. And he considers, you know, stress, anxiety, fear, and everything in that category to be hell on earth. And to acknowledge all these things and rise above it and actually, you know, when you don't agree with it and you stay away from the gossip, you create your own heaven on earth because this is your dream, your reality.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So let's bring up the point where nothing others do is because of you. I really want to highlight this because it seems like a lot of people take things
so personal.
Like, so personal. And I'm not going to lie, like sometimes it's hard, challenging, and especially when you just find out about this and you're like, wait, don't take things personal. And it's something that you do on a daily basis. Like it's going to take a while. Like, you know, muscles grow, keep practicing it. But man, it could seem like the most personal thing, even, you know, in your relationships, with your spouse, with, you know, family, it could really seem personal because this person knows you or whatever, but they're going through their own things.
Their own thing. And that's crazy because I used to be the king of taking things personal. Like I would take everything personal, and I can see something on TV and take it personal, and the personal TV don't even know I exist. You see what I'm saying? But I started to realize that, you know, especially this book helped me realize that I can't take any of that stuff personal because that, again, is not, it don't have anything to do with me. That's whatever's inside that person. That's something deeply rooted. Everything from hate to racism to whatever is how a person is raised and what they perceive is based on whatever their experience is. That's not my experience. So I don't see through the same lens. We can be in the same building and have completely different views. So when a person comes at me or says anything about me, even family member, like you say, because family can be real close. And I started really, I have a family member, not going to put them out there, not going to say their name or whatever, but a certain family member would always say certain things. And as I, once I stopped taking things personal and started paying attention, I started realizing everything that that person was saying was actually an insecurity from their past or something that they went through as a child, because I started listening more. And once they start, stories start unfolding, I'm like, well, that's kind of hypocritical that you're telling me this, but that. And then I realized, like, oh, these are things that this person went through. So he's trying to put that off. That don't have anything to do with me. And so that's why we can't take things personal.
Yes. And what's actually interesting is, you know, I think a lot of people could get bogged down by the people that's closest to them trying to give them advice, but let's be real, be very selective with who you actually take advice from, and make sure that those people are the kind of people that you actually want to be like.
That part, that is very important. Someone that you want to be like, and they actually have the fruit on the tree in the area that you are looking. So I say that to say, I'm a trainer. So if someone, I can give training advice, but I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to give anybody medical advice. If I give you medical advice, don't believe anything I say. If I tell you I'm going to teach you how to fly a plane, please don't trust me because I'm not a pilot. So go ask a pilot, you know. So, yeah. Again, be careful who you take advice from. If a person don't have results in that area and it's not a person that you see yourself wanting to be like, you know, are inspired by, then don't take advice from that person. Don't take marriage advice from a person that's on relationship number 15, unless they can tell you what not to do, you know.
Yeah. I actually want to bring up a point also about how you don't have to have the best health to have a health plan. You don't have to have, you know, the perfect career to have a outline of what you want to, your action plan to get to where you want to go. You can start where you are to get where you want to be.
And that's what's most important. You have to start where you're at. We all have our own journey to walk. So we start where we're at. No one starts on top. You know, like, we start where we're at, wherever. For some people, we might be starting on ground zero. For some, we might be starting at level one, level two, level three. But you can't compare. And that's another thing, comparison. You can't compare your level one to a person's level 10 because you don't know how long their journey has been. So, again, we all have our own journey, and we start wherever we start from. It's okay. We all make mistakes. No one's perfect. So it's all good.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's important to realize that, you know, no one is perfect. Everyone starts somewhere. So let's move on to the next point, which is don't make assumptions.
Ooh.
A, find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. B, communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstanding, sadness, and drama. And C, with this one agreement, you can completely transform your life.
Yeah, that's big. Don't make assumptions. I think we learned this in grade school. When you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. So assumptions are very dangerous, and on both sides of the spectrum. I have a story where I was assuming, and it wasn't nothing negative. It was a person who, you know, I thought just had their life together, because they did. You know, they had multiple streams of income. They was very successful. And I'm thinking little old me doesn't have anything to offer this person, because this person is already at this height of success. So I assume that they didn't need my help in any aspects of the game. You know, I was like, I can't even add value to this person because this person is already has it all together, career, six figures. He doesn't need any help. And one day we were just talking, and I brought up some people who I was working with or whatnot, and he stopped me and he was like, wow, I would like to meet those people. And we got to talking, and next thing you know, I was able to open up a door for this person because he was looking for an opportunity outside of what he was doing. I assumed that he wasn't because he was already successful. So my assumption would have probably led to, like, you know, not even changing this person's lives, because that opportunity didn't end up impacting that person and changing their life. So just by me assuming that they was in a great place, and it can go both ways. You can make negative assumptions, positive assumptions, whatever the case may be, but you'll never know if you don't ask questions. You have to ask questions and be clear with communication. Sometimes I assume that people didn't like me because they never smiled, and they never smiled at me or never spoke. But then when I walked up to that person and said hi, next thing you know, we have an hour-long conversation, and it, the coolest person on earth. So a lot of times we make assumptions based on, oh, this person looks a certain way, or this person drives a certain car, or this person was raised in a certain neighborhood, or this person's dressed a certain way. Maybe he's, you know, not that smart or not that bright. We cannot make those type of assumptions. We have to actually be bold enough of ourselves to ask a person a question and engage in conversation and get to know a person before we assume a person.
Yes, exactly.
Or make assumptions about a person. That's what I
mean. I mean, there's so many people that, like, after high school, they're like, I thought you were so cute. I had a huge crush on you, or just, you know, wanted to be friends. And I'm like, well, I mean, I didn't know you didn't say anything. So with strangers, you know, never be afraid to go up to people. A lot of my friends that I've made in my life are actually, like, just complete strangers. Exactly.
Absolutely.
But in more intimate relationships, I think what he brings up in the book is, when you're in a relationship with someone, or just someone's really close to you, you can assume and think, like, oh, this person knows me so well, so they should know what I want. But that's not the case.
Not the case.
People aren't mind readers. I mean, not everyone. Most people. So it's really good to just vocalize, what do you want? And, you know, tell them your feelings and stop making assumptions. I think it's good to ask and not assume.
That's something that's starting to help me in my relationship, because in the beginning, like, being that me and my wife known each other for so long, we've been friends for so long, I assumed that she's supposed to know certain things. And I was like, well, I thought you knew already. You're supposed to know. And she was like, I'm not a mind reader. And I had to realize, like, okay, a lot of miscommunication and a lot of friction was coming from that, because we wasn't communicating clearly. So now we ask each other questions to make sure. And I used to assume that if I ask a person a question, then they're going to think that I don't know them, and they're going to get mad. Well, you should know this. You don't. So that's why I would never ask questions, because I think I'm supposed to know already. But that was the wrong assumption. So now that I ask questions, even if I know already, I want to be sure. Even if we already communicated that, I just want to be sure. Clear communication. Is this what you like? Is this that? And then, oh, yes. Okay, I was just making sure. I was just double checking. It's okay to double check. You know,
exactly. And also, when you are very clear with what you want, it's a lot easier for people to give it to you. And let's just, for any of those who believe in whatever they believe in, God, the universe, you know, Buddha, Allah, whatever you believe in, it's a lot easier for that power to give you what you want when you know what you want and you actually express it.
Exactly. Again, because we can't just assume that things are supposed to happen. Like, you know, we have to be clear what we want. We have to put, you know, some action towards that. We have to know. We have to be clear what we want. We have to ask for it. And there it is.
Exactly. So let's move on to the next point about, always do your best. Your best is going to change from moment to moment.
Absolutely.
It will be different when you are healthy as opposed to sick. And B, under any circumstance, simply do your best and you will avoid self-judgment, self-abuse, and regret. He makes a point where if you do less than your best, you will have regret. If you do more than your best, then you're going to get burnt out. But if you only do your best, then you can feel confident that you tried, you know, you tried your best.
You tried your best. Absolutely. I always tell people that, especially as a trainer, your best is different every day. You know, like, it's not always going to be the same. Yesterday, coming to the gym, my best, I might have had a one rep max of 250 pounds or whatever the case may be, or I might have been able to do a certain amount of reps, and then tomorrow I come in the gym and I give it my best, but I'm not nearly as strong. Or maybe I just had a bad day, but I still give it my all. I like to use analogy. Always, when I break this down, I always like to use Kobe Bryant as an example. On a basketball court, he always talked about leaving it all on the floor, like giving it your all. So if you look at him, you'll see certain games. You go back and watch his games, certain games where there's a game where he scored 81 points. There's a game where he scored 60 points. And then there are some game where he may have scored 23 or 24 or 30 points, which you would look at a Kobe Bryant as like, okay, this guy can score 60, 80 points. So 20-something points might not have been such a good game to him. But the average player is not even scoring 20 points. But was the 20-point game a bad game and an 81-point game a good game? No, they both are good games. He gave it his all. On this day, he was able to score 81 points. And on this good game day, he was able to score 20. But that 20 was probably the hardest 20 he ever scored. Maybe he was playing with the flu or whatever the case may be, playing against a better team, a better defense. But he still gave his all, just as much effort to score that 20 as it took to score that 81. So I say that to say some days our effort might be, we might be a 10, but the next day it might be a 5. But if that 5 is our best and all that we got, like we give it all we got and that's our best, that 5, then it's equivalent to that 10. We're not always going to be on 10 every day. That's impossible. That is highly impossible. So I think a lot of times we get caught up in accomplishments like, oh, yesterday I was able to do all this and accomplish all this, and today I'm having a bad day. No, long as you gave it your all and you went out and did something and you left it all on the floor, that's all that matters.
Totally. Yeah. My a value that I learned from my dad is if you try your best in everything that you do, then everything you do will be of value.
Absolutely.
And, you know, let me just say that again to really help people understand.
Say it again.
If you try, or if you do your best in everything that you do, everything that you do will be of value.
Love it.
You know, they say that you're only as good in the game as you are in practice. You know, I mean, I think that having the discipline to try your best, that I heard Tony Robbins say this morning, discipline weighs ounces, regret weighs tons.
Oh.
So.
Oh. You know, I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
That was good.
And I want, so yeah, what are your thoughts about that?
I think that is the absolute truth, because discipline, if you think about it, discipline starts with very small habits. I like to look at it like this. Discipline starts with very small habits. And discipline is not like one big thing. It's a bunch of small habits consistently. So consistency of small habits is discipline. Now, regret, it weighs a ton. We all know that when we regret something, oh my, it felt like we just had this ton of bricks we walking with. It felt like the sky is dark and we just, oh, it's regret is like, it's like drinking poison. It's horrible. We all hate living with regret. So I really think, I feel that completely, because some things that I have regretted not doing, and it really like, it hurts. Like regret hurts, especially when you know you could have done something better, or especially when you know you pass up on an opportunity that you could have done, or especially when you know you could have got up, but you was being lazy and then you regret. Now, you don't want to live with those type of regrets.
Exactly. And
but I like to add, no, go ahead, what you about to say?
No, go ahead.
I just like to add that if that do happen, just get back up, because we all fall. Just get back up and keep going. Don't just wallow in it and just, no regret. No, get back up and start over if that does happen.
Exactly. And, you know, starting from, if for some reason what you're doing doesn't follow through, you're not starting from zero, you're starting from experience. And when you feel the need to want, to do something and the momentum is there, act on it. Because when you don't, the more time that passes, the more that fire dissipates. So keep it going. Keep it burning. You have to write them. And I think swift action with, real intent that comes from the heart, that's unstoppable.
No, for real. No, that's the absolute truth, because I've been a victim of that. I've been a victim of, having momentum and then slowing down or stopping or, not really riding that momentum. And, oh, my, it takes – the longer you wait, the longer it takes to get the ball back rolling. The harder it is to get the ball back rolling, because now you just got to force yourself into it. But it's okay. It's okay. We all go through that. So, I will go through times where – I will slow down my momentum, and it might take a month, 2 months. But as consistency over time, now when I fall, my falls are much shorter. I'm able to get right back up, a day or two or however long it takes. But I remember in the beginning of my journey, oh, my, I would fall off, and I would just fall off for months and be like, oh, my. Then I get back on and get back on. So, like I say, just keep getting up. Just continue to get up, and eventually that momentum will build again. And when once it built, just keep your pedal to the metal.
Yeah, exactly. And a few more points that he makes in the book that I want to also bring up is about your body is your temple, and you have all these cells in your body that are alive and that make you who you are. Today that help you live.
Yeah.
So, I think in our American culture, a lot of our food is based off of what tastes good. But when we really think about it and look down beneath the taste, food should definitely taste good and it should definitely be appetizing. Because if it's not, then it's probably your body telling you not to eat it. But I think it comes down deeper to that. It's about nourishing your body, because you have to support this, live cells in your body. And not only that, but you as a person are a creation of God. And whatever that means to you, I believe that because we are a creation of God, we should respect ourselves in, physically, mentally, spiritually. We should follow the four agreements, because we have evolved for millions of years to get to the place where we are today. I heard this guy on YouTube saying, his name is Sad Guru. Even though his name is Sad Guru, he's an so amazing. But he says, if our brain was cut in half, you wouldn't have anxiety. You wouldn't go through these things that humans go through. But we didn't want you to have only half of your brain. It is a blessing to be a human at the capacity that we have now. The problem that a lot of people have is they don't know how to control the most basic emotional intelligence. And that's why, people have some challenges. But if we can learn how to actually take control of that and control our brain that we've, are so blessed to have, then we can create our own heaven dream on earth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said.
Thank you. So do you have any final messages that you'd like to share?
My final message is I'll kind of piggyback off of what the last thing you were just talking about, as far as like our temple and nourishing ourselves. That's also self-love. That's self-love and really nourishing ourselves. And how we treat ourselves is how we eventually treat others. And how we treat others is how we want ourselves to be treated. So it's like a full circle. It's like a full circle. And like you said, we are a reflection of God. We are made of God in his image, or whatever a person believes in, we are, you know, made by a higher power. So I feel like a lot of times, well, I know a lot of times food plays a big part in that, because food helps with our vibrations. Like when we're eating live foods, things, fruits, vegetables, things that we're supposed to be eating, we feel alive. Those help us vibrate higher. So ultimately we're feeding our higher self. But when we're eating a lot of fleshly foods, things that we're not supposed to be eating, we're actually feeding our flesh, our lower self, and we're kind of destroying ourselves. Things, I'm not saying don't enjoy and indulge, but it should be in moderation. If you're eating more horrible food than you are, you know, nutritional food, then you're off balance. And a lot of times that have a lot to do with how we think, because how we eat is how we think. If we're eating low vibration food, we're going to think on low vibrations, because again, we're feeding those cells in our body, but those cells in our body are also controlled by the cells in our brain. So it's all connected. And that's another reason why our thoughts and stress and things like that are related to disease, because the cells in our body, which is in our brain, which is our thoughts, control the cells in our body. So if we start to think negatively and anger and stress and all this stuff, then our body becomes stressed and we become sick. So,
exactly. So
take care of yourself. Self-love, mentally, spiritually, physically. Love on yourself more. Learn how to talk to yourself more. That's very important. We are the only species on earth that can think about what we're actually thinking about. So that means you have the ability to capture your thoughts. So if you're having a negative thought, you have the ability to say, wait, hold on. That's not true. I don't agree with that. Let me replace that with a positive thought. We have the ability to do that. But a lot of time we're taught to be lazy thinkers. But we have to start using our brain more and become, you know, thinkers like we are.
Yeah. So I have one last point to make. And I think this one will resonate with a lot of people. It's self-abuse comes from self-rejection. And self-rejection comes from not living up to the expectation that you hold for yourself. And more background on that is people, and mostly the ones that are dearest to you, you try to live up to an expectation that either they put on you or that you put on yourself to impress them. So, to, you know, when you don't live up to this expectation, you start self-rejecting yourself, which leads to self-abuse. And also, when you are in a relationship with anyone, any kind of relationship, but when you treat yourself better than you treat that, when you treat yourself better than that person treats you, you will probably leave that person.
Absolutely.
But if you treat yourself worse than that person treats you, you will probably stay with that person because you think that you deserve it. So, yeah. So, I mean, there are so many points in the four agreements that I would love to talk about. Maybe we'll make a part two sometime. But for now, I just want to say thank you, Danae, for coming onto the show again. discussing.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.